Makeshift Stories is now a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. If you want to learn more about the network and how it supports Alberta podcasts, or check out some of our members' shows, please point your browser to albertapodcastnetwork.com. This story is the only remaining record of our existence and the events which led us into obscurity. Everything else has been scrubbed from time. Makeshift Stories 131, Series Chapter 11, Nexus. The competitive advantage had arrived overnight and lay like a giant sleeping whale moored to a temporary mast in the main DZ parking lot. To the consternation of the employees who now had to park in a field and take a shuttle bus to the sprawling research campus, the area had been closed to accommodate the giant mobile HQ. Tim had been forced to skirt around the blocked-off area to get to the main administration building, which made him a few minutes late for his meeting with Simone, Serene's host. When he arrived, the head of Orbital Mechanics was reading through a large stack of files. Simone had turned out to be very different than Tim had been led to believe. Despite his junior status, she had listened to him, rather than simply dismissing his findings. The other staff in the computational center had claimed she was single-minded and closed to ideas other than her own. Most feared any interaction with her. "Good morning," Tim ventured carefully, in case the head's sympathetic attitude a few days earlier had only been a friendly aberration.
"What is it?"
she grumbled, sounding perturbed that she was being interrupted. "The competitive advantage arrived last night. Are we still going to see the director?" Serene looked up, noticed Tim, and softened her tone.
"Oh, Tim, yes, of course. I was just caught up in these reports."
She apologized, carefully placing the folder she had been reading back on the top of the precarious-looking stack.
"I was reviewing the mission profile. There's nothing about refueling in the belt. You're right. Something's wrong. No offense, but it's obvious."
"Only if you're willing to ask questions," Tim added. Then, looking around to see if anyone was in earshot, whispered, "Questions aren't exactly encouraged on this project."
"I've been thinking about it, Tim. Costs have been tight from the beginning, and DZ's ability to finance the project is questionable. We know the CEO doesn't accept no for an answer. Someone may have decided it was easier to make the budget rather than the mission work."
Serene pinned her name tag to her sweater, then got up.
"You brought the cleaned up calculations?"
Tim nodded and held up a manila folder.
"Okay, let's go."
Serene had taken the last few days to plow through her host's files. She was a department head in the asteroid mining project, which was being developed by DZ's new space industries division. To date, the company had only managed to just barely launch a small satellite. The plan seemed too ambitious. The CEO, one Daniel Johnson, monomaniacal in his drive to achieve his vision in breakneck time. He ran the company with an iron fist. There was something about this person. Many threads in the sub-ether passed through the events around him, and his actions appeared to have heavily influenced the shape of the current timeline. Serene wanted to get close enough so she could examine his mind. Was he the reason she had been drawn to this world? And the young man, Tim, he still seemed out of place, and that was bothering her. The security guards at the ramp to HQ accepted their ID without a problem. Tim and Serene walked up and entered into a great reception room on the bottom level of the competitive advantage. Janva's host, Zara Patel, her assistant, and two corporate lawyers had been standing in the reception lounge outside Daniel Johnson's office for nearly 20 minutes.
"It shouldn't be that much longer,"
Rayanish, a diminutive executive assistant, dressed in a neat but unstylish business suit, apologized. Janva felt that Rayanish was more than he appeared. Canper's files on the man only noted that he had managed to tolerate the DZ CEO longer than anyone else. If time permitted, Janda decided she would scan his mind.
"It's a stalling tactic to make us feel uncomfortable,"
Maya whispered impatiently in Janva's ear.
"You should threaten to walk away. We'll let them play. Let them think they're in control."
But in fact, the tactic was working. Her patience was beginning to fray. Janva caught Rayanish discreetly glancing at his watch before announcing,
"We can go in now."
He pushed the heavy wood doors open and brilliant sunlight spilt into the lounge, forcing everyone to squint. Unaffected, Rayanish ushered them through. The oversized office on the other side contained a large rectangular table shaped like the letter O. Four uncomfortable-looking chairs had been positioned on the closest side facing a bank of large windows, which wrapped around three walls. Evidently, the whole room was cantilevered out over the front of the giant cupola that formed DZ's HQ in the clouds. The airship had been tethered in such a way that the afternoon sun blazed through the windows. Silhouetted against the glare was a large, leather-backed swivel chair. Its occupant waited until they had all settled into their seats before swinging around. Daniel Johnson, despite his 80 years, looked like a man of 50. His shaved head gleamed in the sunlight, making him appear to be wearing a crown of fire. His eyes bore into Janva. She was mesmerized for an instant, before pulling back and digging down into the sub-ether to explore the patterns formed by Daniel Johnson's mind. Instead, she found the transmuted presence of the Triffle Amos, guarded by another. She had sensed this before, but her adjustment to her host had distracted her. She should have been searching the patterns. Mind still in the sub-ether and mad at herself, she inadvertently let her host vocalize her reaction.
"It's you, isn't it?"
The other members in her group looked stunned and taken aback. Maya, her assistant, adeptly covered for her, citing a recent illness.
"I'm happy to finally meet you in person,"
she had her host say without an apology. Then, hoping to catch the Triffle off guard, cut directly to the chase.
"We'll fund your project, Mr. Johnson, on one condition. I will need to be the co-director."
It's best to keep your enemies close. It was the second part of a saying her host lived by. Janva couldn't find the other half, but agreed with the sentiment. Maya looked stunned. The lawyers cringed. After a moment, Daniel Johnson smiled.
"I accept your offer."
There was a lot hidden in the simple answer, and the threads of the sub-ether were already twisting with subterfuge. Janva knew she would need to be on her guard. Swimming with a shark was a dangerous business. Serene and Tim stood in the cavernous main level entrance to the air structure competitive advantage. An elegant grand staircase made from carved hardwood led up to the mezzanine, with what appeared to be marble columns holding up a vaulted ceiling. Stunned by the opulence, both silently gawked before Serene leaned over and whispered,
"They certainly didn't spare any expense, did they?"
Considering that it was an airship, she thought, the builders hadn't seemed concerned about the weight of the over-the-top extravagance. Finally, noticing a security desk with a large schematic of the structure behind it, Serene motioned for Tim to follow.
"We're looking for the director of special projects?"
Serene politely inquired of the bored-looking uniformed guard, who was sitting behind a counter which contained a complex manual switchboard.
"And who are you?"
the surly woman replied without looking up.
"I'm Simone Newman, the head of orbital mechanics for the Asteroid Mining Initiative. My assistant Tim and I need to speak to the project director regarding a calculation error we've discovered."
"I don't see you on the appointment roster. You'll need to..."
"It's urgent."
Serene cut the woman off, then, anticipating where this was going, added,
"It could cost the company millions."
But the guard held her ground.
"You don't have an appointment."
Tim moved around to the side of the counter and examined the large diagram of the air structure while Serene continued to argue with the stubborn woman.
"Come on," he finally encouraged. "Let's go."
Serene turned to tell him to be quiet, but saw from his expression that he had another idea. As they walked away from the security desk, Tim explained,
I saw where the director's office is. Let's just go there and wait outside. He's got to come out at some point.
The director's office was on the top level of the airship, across from the executive suite. Serene was distracted by the strong sensations she was receiving. Two others were close by, one trying to hide their presence, the other broadcasting like a giant radio tower. Was that intentional? Suddenly, the large wooden doors to the executive suite burst open, throwing a column of blinding light into the lounge. Four people emerged from the glare, engaged in an intense conversation. The small man in the lead broke away from the group and headed to an intercom built into the far wall. He flipped several toggle switches, then began to quietly talk to someone on the other end. Finally noticing Serene and Tim, the other three appeared to agree on some point and stopped talking. The two men, for some reason Serene knew they were lawyers, walked away, leaving a smartly dressed young woman by herself. The woman walked over to the lounge and sat down across from Tim.
Hi,
Tim said, looking up from a sheet of calculations he had been rechecking.
I see from your name tags that you're DZ employees. I'm Maya. Maya Walden from the Campor Heavy Industries.
Rumor has it that Campor is here to invest in the project. Is that true?
What brings you to the executive level?
Maya deflected.
Must be important.
I'm working on the asteroid mining initiative, Tim volunteered. We're waiting for the project director. Now Maya seemed interested.
Oh, tell me about it.
Before Serene could object, Tim passed the woman the sheet with his calculations. Maya examined it with interest, then looked up.
Is this true? The fuel calculations are wrong? It's just a theory,
Serene countered, noticing the man in the suit by the intercom had stopped to listen. Tim's enthusiasm had obviously gotten the better of him.
No, it's more than that. We've both checked it.
Tim looked at Serene for support. The man in the suit was suddenly behind Maya and grabbed the calculations from her. He glanced at the sheet, then yelled,
Security!
Makeshift Stories and the Alberta Podcast Network are powered by ATB. To learn more about ATB, please drop over to atb.com/listen. ATB Cares is perhaps one of the coolest ideas ever. You can donate to your favorite charity on atbcares.com, and ATB will cover the fees, plus add 15% to your donation.
You have been listening to Ceres, a Makeshift Stories production. Ceres is released once a month between the 1st and the 7th. The story is written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing music by David H. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. You can help us out by writing a review on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or any of your favorite podcast services. Ceres and Makeshift Stories are released under a Creative Commons, non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.
Thanks for listening. And remember to come back between the 15th and the 20th for another story in our series, Somewhere, Sometime.